It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cannabis Q&A, and we've got Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the line with us. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a wild night after kind of a crazy day.
Are you excited for the debate tonight?
I'm actually a little frightened.
Just a little frightened. All right. I am too, to be honest with you, but fortunately I have some herbs to calm my nerves. I think I'm going to need it. And some folks out there, I understand, are enjoying various drinking games that they're going to play during the debate. We want to encourage everyone to be careful with those kind of things, because if you're gonna drink every time Donald Trump says something stupid, you could kill yourself. Alcohol's poison, isn't it, Dr. Mitch?
Quite literally. And I'm afraid even a weight-based dose is not going to help on a night like tonight.
That's right. No kidding. All right, so let's get to some of the studies while we wait for some calls or questions in our chat room. You can call in live at 650-LEGAL-MJ, but we'll start with some of the studies that we need to get to. And this latest one, I just saw it in Live Science before I got on the air. It says, heavy marijuana use may damage the brain. Dr. Mitch, am I suffering Dane Bramage?
I'm afraid it's something much more complicated, Russ. These are strange reviews and then a report of a single case study where this poor guy probably turned to cannabis because he was having some kind of psychotic features. And they're like, he died from injuries sustained when he jumped from a car from smoking pot that made him lose touch with reality. And just how would you know if he's dead? And the whole thing is really just an N of one. They do try to point to some reviews that suggest that heavy use early in life makes some modest changes in the proportion of white and gray matter, but that has failed to replicate. Of course, we're down on heavy use before your brain is completely developed. But as the language in this gets harder and harder and just more and more severe, discussing drastic consequences and psychoactive components, you start to realize, hey, this is just actually a retread of data that have been reviewed before that suggests that, hey, marijuana is not for kids, but it's definitely not going to kill you.
We have a follow-up question in our chat room kind of related to this that says there's been a lot of reference by prohibitionists to this study out of Switzerland where they examined marijuana habits of over 3,000 Americans for 25 years, said that people that smoke marijuana on a daily basis for long periods of time had poorer verbal memory in middle age than people who don't smoke or smoke less. Do you know about this study, and what's your take on it?
I do remember that, and I hate to say it, the data are pretty compelling, but remember, these folks aren't randomly assigned. I'm afraid what happened is probably the folks who chose to use marijuana during the age when they were supposed to develop their vocabularies missed school that day or didn't encode those words. So it's partly a problem with that. And then there are some modest changes, but when you look at the effect sizes on these, it's really maybe half a word. So if you're trying to remember dictionary, you won't remember dick.
Well, I've been smoking marijuana for a long time, and my words be good. All right, let's. We've got another study here that says vaporizing cannabis can decrease a pot smoker's chance of getting addicted to tobacco and or nicotine. This sounds quite interesting.
What's fun is you'd think, oh, hey, maybe there's some wild mechanism, but actually this is a correlational thing. So what a surprise. Folks who choose to use a vaporizer exclusively also choose to avoid smoking cigarettes. Duh. Like, people who value their lungs value their lungs. So I do think that there's a neat idea in that maybe vaporization, in part because it doesn't create that sensation of a heavy smoke inside the lungs that a number of tobacco smokers claim that they sort of crave and miss when they quit. That might be an interesting hypothesis, but because these are correlational, I honestly can't say, and I wouldn't want to randomly assign anybody to smoke cigarettes. So we're sort of in a weird situation where we're never going to know for sure, but by all means, stay away from that nasty tobacco.
All right. Well, there's a story I saw in the Daily Mail, and whenever I get to the British papers and stories about cannabis, I always have to, you know, exercise some caution and due diligence. But this one claims a study says that sleep-deprived kids were more likely to become cannabis consumers later in life. Any validity to this?
So, again, it's correlational, but in fact, we've seen some comparable stuff where generally being sleep-deprived increases impulsive decisions in a number of domains. So they also binge drink more, they're more likely to overeat, and they're more likely to claim things like they don't wear their seatbelts, they wouldn't mind sitting in the front car of the roller coaster. So I think this is actually a sort of a personality trait where folks who are high in sensation seeking would rather go out and have fun than actually get their head hit the pillow. So I really want to encourage everyone tonight, go to sleep 15 minutes early, and you'll see this by the end of the week. If you keep it up, you're going to feel a whole lot better, regardless of how much cannabis you use.
When we talk about sleep deprivation and the effects on people, of course, you know, a major cause of highway accidents and such. But when we talk about getting enough sleep, is it a question of how many hours, or is it also the quality of the sleep, particularly as we've been seeing a resurgence of the understanding that heavy cannabis use can suppress your REM sleep and your ability to dream. Is there any thoughts on that as far as the quality of sleep?
So in fact, yeah, if you miss out on those stage 3 and stage 4, even if you have the same number of time, you don't report the same wakefulness during the day afterwards. And so I do encourage folks to, you know, make sure they take some time away from the plant. And if you're really struggling, there's a new meta-analysis on melatonin suggesting as little as a milligram and a half can really help you. And if you try that for 4 or 5 nights in a row while you're staying away from cannabis, you'll notice this wild dream rebound. You'll have wonderful things to talk about with your therapist. And then when you return to the plant, you'll notice you have lower tolerance and your sleep should be okay. But the real key is making sure you've got good sleep hygiene so that your bed is just for sleep and sex, and that you try to make sure your head hits the pillows 8 hours before you're supposed to wake up.
I mentioned that folks online seem to be reawakening to, pardon the pun, to the dream information, the REM sleep. And can you refresh our listeners on how cannabis affects REM sleep and dreaming? And is that a bad thing?
Unfortunately, it's not a great thing. Some folks are pointing out that it may mean you're actually getting more stage 4, the one that's sort of deeper than the dreaming. But I've seen some literature with cats and stuff like that. This just isn't a great idea for the long term. So because that stage where you have the REM sleep tends to be a little bit suppressed, when folks first have a day off, you do see this REM rebound where suddenly they'll have a whole bunch of REM sleep. And that's why one of the symptoms on the dreaded withdrawal questionnaire is usually something like strange dreams or nightmares or something like that. Obviously, if that's your symptom of dependence, don't tell an opiate addict or they will kick you in the crotch.
No kidding. A friend of mine has some investments, and one of them is in GW Pharmaceuticals. He was quite happy the other day because the price had spiked. Apparently, we got the information as to why. It looks like they've passed a third clinical trial. Can you give us some more details?
Well, I mean, I'm regretting that I sold it over a year ago, but that's what happens sometimes. Basically, GW's now had three cannabidiol-oriented cannabis-based drugs. It's an interesting thing with children. It's focused primarily on a subset of an epileptic disorder that's characterized by seizures and some developmental delays. I'm delighted that this is working. I really do hope that we'll see more research in this area, but we shouldn't be too surprised. We've been talking about this for years now. I'm just glad to see a large randomly controlled study is proving this. GW probably is ripe for some kind of acquisition by Big Pharma. I'm eager to see what really happens here, and I hope those who do have the stock can make the most of it.
Yeah, amazing. We've got this other story to talk about, and as cannabis becomes more recognized for its medical properties and legalized for the use of those properties, we have to worry a little bit more now about drug interactions and how other drugs might affect, or cannabis might affect the ability of these other drugs to work. There was a story I was reading on the risks of using antipsychotics when one is using medical marijuana. And of course, there have been reports that, you know, marijuana psychosis, is there a link? Could it be a trigger? So is there a problem with drug interaction in this case?
What's curious is, you know, cannabidiol actually has antipsychotic properties. So it's in some ways kind of a waste. If you've got a nice high CBD strain, you may not need the antipsychotic medications. They're particularly targeting Americans 55 and over. And the fact that they kind of pump these poor guys full of antipsychotics is usually to try to keep them under control with dementia. This newspaper article happens to mention a failure to show improvement with a THC-based drug with dementia patients. But there are other publications that actually suggest, what a surprise, THC can enhance appetite and improve mood in folks who've got some dementia symptoms. So the jury's kind of still out on that. But when I really think of dangerous THC bad interactions, the one to worry about is Viagra. The metabolism of Viagra is definitely slowed when THC is in your system, and you do not want to have 4 hours of Viagra effects.
That does not sound fun and makes it really tough to do the math problem on the blackboard. All right. We have a question from our chat room. One of our listeners in Hawaii mentions that he's out of cannabis and he's feeling withdrawal. In that situation, and you can't find any more cannabis, what are some other techniques you might use to deal with the withdrawal?
Well, what's funny is the withdrawal symptoms are pretty idiographic, so it sort of depends on which one you're having. If you're having trouble with the sleep, as I mentioned, melatonin might be a big opportunity. For anxiety, some of the standard relaxation techniques actually work really well. A lot of us get in the habit of breathing through our mouths very rapidly. If you'll just slow your breathing down and breathe through your nose, you'll be stunned at how much more relaxed you feel. The general agitation and stuff like that is a big opportunity for changing your life so that you have less stress. So make sure your time is managed well. Make sure you're getting enough sleep. And if people are irritating you, run away.
There we go. All right, folks. That's about all the time we got here with Dr. Mitch for this Monday. But join us every Monday here on the show for our Cannabis Q&A. And get the long form. Get more information on Dr. Mitch's show right here on CannabisRadio.com. It's Burning Issues. And Dr. Mitch, what can we look forward to on the next episode?
Oh, so I've got more in the can now than I know. But I believe I've got Ashley Grace on the Hempire section. And some fun stuff from... Oh, wow, Russ, I'm spacing.
Oh, how could that have happened?
But I do have an interesting section on just self-care at the end of each show called Self-Compassion and the Art of Activism. So by all means, check out the last 5 minutes just to get a feel for how to handle things like a situation with cannabis withdrawal.
All right, check that out. Burning Issues here on CannabisRadio.com. You can reach Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com if you got an email question. Thanks, Doctor, and we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.